Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Mem Dalid of Sefer Yechezkel, chapter 44 of the book of Yechezkel. In the middle of the chapter, we have the Haftarah for Parshat Emor, so we'll see that as a unit when we get to it, but we are continuing with our vision of this future Beit HaMikdash that Yechezkel is being shown. Now it's not going to be so much about dimensions as about how we handle various, will are expected to handle various aspects of it. So Pasuk Aleph starts with Vayashev Otider Shar HaMikdash HaChitzon HaPone Kadim V'hu Sagur. Now he brings him back, the Malach who's showing him what's going on, brings him back to the eastern, the outer gate in the east, and it's shut now. So this is the one that the, he saw the kavod that you witnessed. He saw the kavod coming through, the kavod of Hashem coming through. Now it's closed. Vayomer Elai Hashem, Hashem hazeh sagur yiyeh, lo yipateach, v'ish lo yavovo, ki Hashem lo keYisrael bavo v'haya sagur. So he says this gate should be closed and won't open because people aren't going to be coming through it. Because rather Hashem's kavod will come through it as he witnessed this happen in his vision. So the Radak points out the simplest thing is that it's talking about the big gate of the Heichal of the Beit HaMikdash or of the way in. But Chazal thought there was a little side gate on one of the gates that was supposed to be closed and it was supposed to be particularly set aside for the kavod of Hashem to go into. I would just, in terms of this context of Kvod Hashem Bavo, Avos Rabbi Nosson and Perek Lamed Dalid mentions an idea of that the Shekhinah, God's presence, made 10 Yeridot, descended 10 different times, or in 10 ways, to the world. So one was in Gan Eden originally, and it goes through just Pesukim where Hashem is referred to as coming down into the world in some specific kind of a way. This is one of them. Ki Hashem Elokei Yisrael Bavo. And the last, that's the ninth one. And the last one is mentioned as Zechariah, because Zechariah also has a representation of the war of Gog and Magog. We've seen Gog and Magog referred to explicitly. In Zechariah it's not explicit, but Chazal assume that that future war that's spoken about in Zechariah is talking about Gog and Magog. And there too it says, V'amdu reglav bayamu al har hazeitim, that the metaphorical legs of God will stand on Har HaZeitim, and there will be a whole battle there that's going on. But here, this reference to Kvod Hashem Bavo is a 1 in 10 experience in Tanakh of Hashem speaking of His presence really descending into and coming into the world in a very explicit way. Pasuk Gimel, Et HaNasi Nasihu, Yeshev Bo Le'echol Lechem L'Tnei Hashem, Miderech Ulam Asher Yavo Miderko Yitze. So the Nasi says, we'll sit here in this gate, in the entranceway here, and he'll eat food here. Generally, you weren't allowed to eat in these places, but the Nasi, by virtue of his standing, of his importance, was going to be allowed to eat in this place. So, and the Radak says, because he's such an important person, he will be able to sit here and eat here. It'll be a sign of his honor, of his importance, and so it depends who the Nasi is to understand what's going on. Rashi thinks the Nasi, all throughout this parak, is the Kohen Gadol, is going to be the high priest, and so Rashi says, and it's not appropriate for him to sit with the other Kohanim in their side rooms that we spoke about in other chapters and eat there with them, and therefore he'll eat here. Rashi makes another point here also that the pasuk ends by saying that he comes in Miderech Ulam HaShar and he goes out the same way. He'll come in one of the entranceways that he goes in, but he'll go out the same way, and that is in contradiction to on festival days, and other Jews will have to always make the Beit HaMikdash a kapandaria. So kapandaria is an interesting word because it is the word that we usually use for our small batei Knesset, and we generally say you're not allowed to use it as a kapandaria, meaning you're not allowed to go into a shul just for the purpose of getting through to the other side, making it a shortcut. But when it comes to Beit HaMikdash, Rashi in this parak reminds us that the Tanakh seems to assume that we're required when it comes to Beit HaMikdash to make it a kapandaria, meaning to go out a different way than you came in. Rashi explained that as being because when you come to the Beit HaMikdash, you're supposed to be doing a ri'iyat panim. You are showing yourself to Hashem, and the showing should be in a full way. So if you come in and then leave by the same door, it's not really going through and having a whole complete experience of this structure of this Beit HaMikdash. If, however, you go in and you go out a different way, so then you've made your way through the whole area. So the Kohen Gadol in Rashi's reading A Kohen Gadol has the right, in general, on Yechagim it'll be different, but in general days, when he's coming in to do a specific task and then leave, he, as a as a special figure in the Beit HaMikdash, has the right to go in and come out the same way. The Radak changes the whole meaning of it, and I won't go into it in its fullest ramifications, but the Radak changes the whole meaning because he says the Nasi being referred to here is Melech HaMashiach. So he is seeming to assume that the future king of Israel, even though that's a political role, will also have a different and a special role within the confines of the Mikdash as well, and he will have special rights of eating in certain places and going in and coming out in different ways than most people do. Pasuk Dalet Vayivi Eini Derech Shar HaTzafon Opene Abayit Va'ere V'hinei Malech V'or Hashem Et Beit Hashem V'apol Alpanai. So then he brings me in through the northern gate into the Beit HaMikdash, or into the Bayit, and I see that the Bayit is full of Kvod Hashem, and I fall on my face. Pasuk Hei Vayomer Eli Hashem Ben Adam Sim Lebecha Ure'ei Ve'enecho V'osnecha Shemat. Put your heart to this, see with your eyes, listen with your ears, eat Kol Asher Nimedaber Otach V'chol Chukot Beit Hashem V'chol Torotav V'samto Lebecha Lebevo HaBayit V'chol Motza'ei HaMikdash. He says, pay a lot of attention of all the rules that I'm going to tell you, all of the, so you can differentiate Chukim V'mtarot, but basically it means rules. And make it pay attention to when you're allowed to enter the Beit HaMikdash and all the reasons that people have to be left out of the Beit HaMikdash. So this is going to be now a primer, a rule book, an introduction to, an understanding of what are the rules and what makes one allowed to serve in the Beit HaMikdash, allowed to be there, and what makes one not allowed to be there. So the Sifrei in Devarim adds to this or expands this and says, how do you know? Tzarich Adam, it doesn't say how do you, it just says, Tzarich Adam, libo ve'inav ve'oznam mechuvanim ledivrei Torah. When you hear words of Torah, you have to be paying full attention. You have to pay attention. You have to listen with your eyes. You look with your eyes, listen with your ears. You have to be really trying to absorb it. How do we know? And they quote our pasuk. So it says, Kal v'chomer, the Sifrei says. It's an obvious thing because in the Beit HaMikdash, where you can see it with your eyes, it's a physical item. And in this vision, it was a vision. And you can measure it, and you can just be very aware of what's going on, yet you have to pay a lot of attention to it. So Divrei Torah, which are not like that, they don't have an expression within the real world in the same kind of a way, all the more so that you have to pay attention to it. So that's a lesson for us, even if we're not having the exact vision of Yechezkel, and we're not yet in a time when we can rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. But that point, I think, is worth paying attention to. Pasuk Vav ve'amarta el Meri Beit Yisrael el Meri el Beit Yisrael kol Amar Hashem Elokim Rav lachem mikol tovotechem Beit Yisrael. And the thing you should say to the Jews to lead off into our reminder of the Mikdash is enough with all your tovot, enough with all your abominations, Jewish people. And they're referred to as Meri and then Beit Yisrael, Meri rebellious ones. Pasuk Zayin b'haviyachem b'nei b'nei char arle lev arle basar liot b'mikdashi l'chalalo et beiti. It says, when you bring strangers, uncircumcised of heart and uncircumcised of skin, to serve in Beit HaMikdash, which is a sacrilege, which profanes the bite when they offer the sacrifices, the lechem, the chelev, the dam, the korbanot, with the fats and the bloods, it's a violation of the brit, of the covenant, and it's as to their abominations, l'shmarta mishmeret mikdashin, you don't keep and hold to the mishmeret kodashai, sorry, to the proper way to do my kodashim utvat simun leshamrei mishmerti b'mikdashi lachem, and you put them to be in charge of my Beit HaMikdash. So the reference to Ar Leilev, Rashi and Radak both assume that it means people who have on other occasions served and done idol worship. Rashi has been in Yecharshin. Nakrum asav la'aviv v'shebashamayim v'hin ar lelev. That their actions are foreign to their Father in Heaven, and they are the ones called ar lelev. And then Alev Asar is a Kohen, is a priest who did not have a brit milah. And so that he didn't have brit milah on purpose seems obvious to Rashi. Rashi says the point is here, even if he didn't have a brit milah because his brothers died of having brit milah, so the tradition was if a woman has babies and two of them, God forbid, die from the brit milah, so in our days we wouldn't let that happen, but then you didn't always know what it was, and it turns out that would be confirmation that it's a hemophilia kind of an issue, and therefore you wouldn't do a milah on the third brother, but he couldn't serve as a kohen of the Mikdash, because arelut, being uncircumcised, even if it lacks any culpability, right, there's nothing wrong with this person in Hashem's eyes, he's supposed to be an arel, but nonetheless arelim are not able, are not allowed to come to the Beit HaMikdash to serve. That halacha, the Gemara in Zvachim points out, is a halacha that was a halacha l'Moshe Sinai until Yechezkel came along and put it into Sefer Yechezkel. So the Gemara in two places says, but so who said it before Yechezkel? So it says Gemara Gemirilov Ad Yechezkel v'Asmicha Akra. It was a halacha l'Moshe Sinai. It was a halacha we got down with from Har Sinai, and then Yechezkel put it into some form of a pasuk for us. So you'd have a whole discussion as to whether that's a daraisa, derabbanan, halacha l'Moshe Sinai, exactly how we treat those. How we treat those things. And not only does Yechezkel tell us that they're not allowed to serve, but he also tells us the mechale avoda, that the service that they do doesn't qualify, isn't valid, and it's just as if it wasn't done. Okay? So that is what's going on here with these koanim, and he's saying, oh, so the piece that I wanted to point out, though, was, if you look, let's say, in the book of Yeshayahu, or Yirmiyahu, you might get the impression that the Jews were too focused on sacrifices, and that was a problem, right? They didn't care about, we've seen this in Yechezkel as well, they didn't care about murdering other people, they didn't care about robbing, stealing, all sorts of terrible moral crimes. Those didn't make a big impression, they didn't have a big problem with them, but at least the Beit HaMikdash, right, and Hashem has to say, but I don't want your korbanot so much, and it sounds like the reason I don't want your korbanot is that that they're not part of a bigger picture. But at least here in this context, you're seeing that not only is that one problem, not only is there a problem with the fact that they're not part of a proper bigger picture, but here you see that it's also true that the Beit HaMikdash service was not purely LaHashem. It was being offered by people who otherwise are not serving Hashem in the right way, who are Obdei Avodah Zarah, whose hearts are not directly towards God. So it means that they're willing to do this service towards God, but they don't have the right sense of what God is even as they're doing this service, and that's a significant problem, a significant issue. And so you see that all the time too. You see that often too, right? People will say, well, of course I'd love to do Jewish mitzvot, but I'll do other things as well. So here, Yechezkel is telling us, those people are iron leiv. They don't have the proper attitude towards Hashem, and at least if they were a Beit HaMikdash and they were Kohanim, that would be a problem in terms of them serving, because that is not the kind of figure. It's not that you know the halachos of a korban properly. It's not even that at the moment that you're offering the korban, you'll have the right kavanot. You'll say, I'm offering this korban to God. It has to be that you as a person have the right kavanot, the right intentions in terms of service of God. And if you serve other gods, then even if at this moment you're serving this God, that is unacceptable, and that would be Ayr Lev. Pasuk Tet Komar Hashem Elokim Kol Ben Nechar Ariel Lev Ariel Basar Leyavol Mikdashi Lechol Ben Nechar Asher B'toch Bnei Yisrael. And now, so Hashem says, in any of these kinds of people, in the future, the rule is they're not allowed to come in, they're not allowed to serve, they're not allowed to serve in the Beit HaMikdash anymore. Pasuk Yud, Ki Im Alevim Asher Rechaku Me'alai B'tot Yisrael Asher Tau Me'alai Acharei Gilehem V'nasu Avonam. Those Levim, those Kohanim, those people whose job was, and I think the stress on Levim here is their job was to teach Torah and be faithful to Hashem, and that if they instead distance themselves from God when the Jewish people did, so they could argue, well, I'm just doing what everybody else did, it doesn't matter, that wasn't their role, so, and they followed their Gilulehem, their idols, and their other forms of worship, V'nasu Avonam, they have to bear their sin, they have to bear their iniquity into all times, and they will no longer be allowed to serve in the Beit HaMikdash, they will no longer be allowed to offer korbanot, they will have lost that privilege. Pasuk Gidalev, Ayub Mikdashim Misharatim Pekudot El Sha'arei Habayit Misharatim Et Habayit Heima Yishkatu Et Ha'ula Et Hazavach La'am Heima Yamdu Lifnehem L'Sharatam. So we'll give them some kinds of jobs. They can do certain kinds of things. They can serve in the Beit HaMikdash to a certain extent. So the Radak points out they can serve on the Sha'arim. They can serve at the gates to make sure the wrong people don't come in. This is after they do tshuva. Presumably, they can serve at these gates, and they can slaughter korbanot. And the reason they can slaughter korbanot, as Rashi points out, is because non-kohanim are allowed to slaughter korbanot as well. So that's not a service, that is not a function of kahuna, and therefore that they are allowed to do. They're not excluded from that. But the central priestly sherut service, that they will not be allowed to do. Ya'an ashei shartu otam lifnei lehem, since they did it for idols, for other forms of idol worship, and they were in the past, Rashi says, they were priests for idol worships, and they led the Jews, right? This is the whole reversal. Instead of leading the Jews towards God, they led the Jews to these other forms of worship. Therefore, I have sworn about them. They will bear their sin. And they won't any longer be allowed to come to serve me, and they will bear their iniquity forever in terms of these things that they did. So they will serve the Bnei Mikdash in a subsidiary capacity, but they will have lost that top privilege of serving as full Kohanim. And those Kohanim who were Levi'im, meaning who served in the right way, who were Bnei Tzadok, who were true sons of Tzadok, and Tzadok, we've pointed out several times, is this Kohen who was in the first Bnei Mikdash. He is a model of what a Kohen is supposed to be. So these are the Bnei Tzadok, the true descendants of Tzadok, who kept this Mishmeret when the Jewish people strayed away from me. They will be the ones who will serve and offer the fats and the bloods. This is what Hashem says. So there is a reference here in Yechezkel, and this is always a question that you never know the answer to, but there's a reference then there were some people who never went along. So if you have to draw a picture of the Jewish people around the time of Churban Bayit Rishon, what's going on, you can say, well, 99% of people worshiping idols, it's one possibility, and then there's a tiny minority who are staying true to God. But it might even be 75% who were worshiping idols, and 25% were not. So you have 25%, 25% is a lot of people. 25% of the Jewish people, we don't, for example, today have 25% of the Jewish people who we think of as Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, observing Torah in a sense that what one would call Orthodox, and maybe this for the Orthodox Union, so I hope I don't offend anybody by using that word, but we don't have that percentage today among the Jewish people. So when Hashem says, and I'm not saying that all Orthodox Jews are keeping the Torah the way Hashem wants to, I'm just saying even if you use that as a barometer, you have a problem, you have an issue. So even if 25% of the Kohanim were keeping the Torah right and were faithful to Hashem, that would be a tiny percentage in broad terms. I'll point out that I mentioned my book as often as I can. So I wrote this book, Murderer in the Mikdash, and there is in there a Kohen who is corrupt and reaches high position, and I talk it out with people. People are so offended by the idea. But here you have in Yechezkel, you have it very clear that you have a huge percentage, we don't know exactly how many, but you have a huge percentage of Kohanim who were actively idol-worshipping in Bayit Rishon, and in Bayit Rishon at a time when the mistake of the Jewish people seems to have been that they were too focused on Beit HaMikdash, too focused on that as a center place of how you worship Hashem. So if that's what's going on when they're so focused on that, what would be the situation, another situation? So that's a key thing here in Pasuk Ted Vav, that there are faithful Kohanim, faithful Levi'im, and we don't know what percentage they were, and they're the ones who are going to continue, but they clearly aren't the ones who are enough of the people to prevent the people from straying and from going after idol worship. I recently, Sean Zelagaster, Dr. Sean Zelagaster, who did many of the prakim of many chapters of Yeshayahu, told me that there seems to be some evidence now that in the time of Yirmiyahu, there was a more of a group of people promoting surrender to Bavel, as Yirmiyahu was trying to get them to do, right? Yirmiyahu tells them over and over again in the book of Yirmiyahu that if they only surrender to Bavel, Hashem will maybe not destroy the Bnei Mikdash, they'll have to bear their sins and do tshuva and rebuild, but maybe not have as much of a destruction as we end up having. So he suggests, he thinks there's some evidence, or he says that people are finding some evidence, that there were more people than just Yirmiyahu saying this. It wasn't one lone person. So there may have been a minority of people. There may have been 10% of the people. And 10% in some sense is a lot, and in some sense it's not so much. And here it could have been as much as 25% for all I know who were faithful to Hashem, and still it means that 75% were not. Just last point on this issue, because I think it's important to keep percentages in mind. I was reading a book recently about the presidential election of 1960. So the author, T.H. White, says that in American politics, if you get over, I think he said 55%, but let's say it's 60%, you get over 60% of the vote, that's a landslide. So that means that 35% of people can hold a different way, can think a different way, and it's still a landslide. It still means that the country is so united, or the state, or whatever is in the election, is so united that only 35%. So here, if you transfer that here, it means even 35% of the people, and again, we today, I went to a school which was less than 35% Orthodox kids, and the Orthodox felt like a small minority in the school. So Here too, that's what's going on here, and those numbers are worth keeping in mind. When we talk about having a united group, the kind of unity you need, the kind of numbers you need, and what becomes a minority that can be ignored or feels ignored, so those are issues that come up right here when Hashem says it'll be those Kohanim who will serve in the feud of Ben Mikdash. Pasuk Tet Zayin, Hema Yavo El Mikdashi Vehema Yekrivu El Shulchani LeSharateini. They'll come to the Mikdash, they will serve at the Shulchan, meaning at the Mizbeach, Vashem Ruat Mishmarti, and they will keep my guard. So now when they come to the Beit HaMikdash to serve, so the Navi says they'll wear bigdei pishtim, they'll wear only linen garments, bigdei pishtim yulbashu lo yale alhem tzemer, they won't have any wool on them, bisharitam bishari hachatzer apinimit vavaita, when they serve in the inner court and further in that pari pishtim yuval yosham, and they'll have turbans of pishtim umichnesei pishtim, right, yu al matnehem lo yachgaru bayaza, and they'll wear pants of linen on their loins, on their legs, lo yachgaru bayaza, and then, so the JPS English has it as they won't wear anything that makes them sweat. But Chazal, Rashi and Radak both report that Chazal say that it means it's telling you about the placement, not the kind of material, because they already told you the kind of material. It should be pishtim, rather than tzemer, but rather that it's that the placement of their not of their pins should not be as high as, right? The question is how high does it go? So we obviously all understand pants to go in a certain place, but that's not a necessary aspect of pants, right? If you wear a jumpsuit, then it goes all the way up to your shoulders. So it's telling you it shouldn't go as high as a place where they sweat, meaning as high as their underarms, and therefore that the pants should go higher than we ordinarily wear our pants, but not as high as a place where they would sweat. When they go out, when they go out of service in Beit HaMikdash, right, so they are supposed to take off their clothing, right? And we've said that, we've seen this before, that there's a place, a lishka, that was made for them to deposit their clothing. And they're supposed to take them off and wear other clothing when they go out to associate with the people, so that they don't come into contact, right? They don't come into contact with the people when they're wearing Bigdei HaKodesh, because Bigdei HaKodesh, it's inappropriate, because Leikachu et Am probably means something along the lines of they won't make the Am Kadosh, meaning require the Am to be Kadosh, or require the Am to be Tahor, to be ritually pure, when they're wearing the clothing. And if they were going to wear the clothing outside, then anybody who came into contact with them would have to be, make sure, to be fully tahor. So this highlights an issue that I've raised before, that the Kohanim, when they're serving the Beit HaMikdash, are different people in a lots of ways, and are meant to be different, meant to seem different, to look different, to act different than when they're outside the Beit HaMikdash. And one of the ways that you signify that is when you go into the Beit HaMikdash to serve, you put on the special bigadim, and those tell you that you are now in your role as a Kohen, your fullest role as a Kohen. So even when you're not, even when you're off duty, as we would call it today, you certainly have roles as a Kohen and things that you're supposed to do, but not in its fullest extent. And they can't shave their heads, but they also can't let it grow too much, and so therefore kasom yichsimu. So kasam yichsimu is like the JPS English has it as they should keep the hair trimmed, which avoids the question, which is what we generally means. Rashi says that yitachen defasho lashon midat davar hashaveh as shaveh, that it's an equal level. It's got to be all the same. Lo gizizat harosh, lo gidul se'ar, ela b'midat shaveh. You have to some kind of way equalize the hair on your head, right? And that's the way the Radak has it as too. Radak has it as well. So it's what we would call today, the Gemara understands what we would call today, a buzz cut of a certain length, that it's not extremely long, but there is hair there. It's not shaving the head. There's hair, but hair in very short lengths. And this was taken, this is assumed by the Gemara to be halacha that was generally observed. We're going to talk about, we're getting up to halachot that seem to be changing, but these halachot, the halacha of the haircuts, seems to have been assumed that that's what the Kohanim did. I'm always struck by that because the idea of the Kohanim having to have short hair reminds me, especially in terms of Big Day Kahuna as well, reminds me of an army kind of an experience where some level of individuality is lost by virtue of having everybody get this kind of a buzz cut. So you can tell people apart, but hair is something that easily differentiates among people, and it might be true, and then you have a hat on top of that, but it might be true that part of the goal of Kohanim in the Beit HaMikdash was that they should all seem relatively alike, because the point wasn't the individual Kohen, the point was the service of God that was occurring there. So I think that's a possibility that stems out of the haircut issue. Pasuk of Aleph, V'yayin lo yishtu kol Kohen b'voam l'chatzar p'nimit, they can't drink any wine when they come in to do service. This is a halacha that's well known. The almana ugrusha lo yikhu lahem l'nashim, and they can't marry an almana or a grusha. So this is a new halacha, this is a strange halacha, right? We ordinarily say that ordinary Kohanim cannot marry grushot, cannot marry divorcees. It is a halacha that people today, particularly women, take offense at because they assume that it means that there's something wrong with the woman who is a grusha. Now, here in terms of the vision of the future, Yechezkel is being told that they won't marry almanot either, they won't marry widows either. So you have to wonder about that. Ki'im, so the end is ki'im b'tulom mizer b'Yisrael, they have to marry unmarried women, or the almana sheti almana mikohen yikachu, or a woman who is an almana, a widow, but a widow from having married a kohen, so that kind of a woman they're allowed to marry. So why? Why should that be? That's the a clear question I think that stems out of here. So I think though that the evidence here gives us an insight into why it would be that in general we say that Kohanim can't marry Grushot. Because here, the woman who's a widow, she's a widow. It's clear that there's nothing wrong with her in terms of that we have any problem with her morality by virtue of the fact that she's a widow. She was married before. What's the big deal? So and the fact that if she was married to a Kohen, it would even in this future time not be a big deal. So that's an interesting question. First, a couple of questions. One is, this is not halacha that we know of in the Torah. So that's a question that came up in the Gemara in several ways because Yechezkel has several things like this, several occasions where the halachot he seems to predict for the future do not seem to match the halachot that we have. There's two main ways of dealing with it. Chazal do their best to assume that Yechezkel is really matching up with the halacha as we know it and expresses it a different way or something, or that voluntarily the Kohanim will take on new rules for themselves, not as halacha, but as just they think that it's better, they think that it's important and valuable to do so. So one possibility is that it's all the same halacha. Halacha doesn't change at all. And halacha doesn't change at all, but these are voluntary things they're adding on to themselves. Even then, you'd have to figure out why they're adding them on themselves, what is the value that they saw in making the decision and adding it on. But the Radak seems to think, and he does this in several places, that no, halacha will actually change. So that whole topic of halachic change is a sensitive one in a time of when we have issues with, let's say, reform and conservative who change halacha in ways that the Orthodox see as being too capricious or too easy or too lax. So certainly it's an issue to think about changing halacha, but the Radak wasn't talking about those times. He wasn't faced with any of that. And if you look at the Pesukim, it seems like the Radak is closer to right. So that's an issue. I think that part of the answer might be that there are occasions when later events might reveal that the halacha as it was originally given wasn't the only parameters of that halacha that there could have been, and that you find new parameters as time goes on. An example I mentioned before that I think is the clearest example is where the Ramban suggested the halachos of the Hebrew, of the Jewish calendar changed once the Jews came back from Babel, that the redemption from Babel revealed the fact that the calendar is supposed to be attached to the most recent example of Jewish salvation. So that's a very big change in the halacha because it meant that we could count the calendar with Babylonian names of months, but the Ramban meant it fully within the confines of halacha. So here too, it might be that if that's true, it might be that the Radak is telling us is that the original halacha of limiting who they were married to was a question of, I think perhaps, the extent to which the woman will bring into the marriage memories of the old marriage, and those memories of the old marriage might get in the way of her being willing to accept that which her husband tells her is the way that that this family, as Kohanim, handle things. So if that's true, then that could explain the Gerusha issue in a full kind of way, meaning it would say it's not that she's, there's anything wrong with her, it's that she comes with the baggage of her old marriage. And we know that because we know that there's a lasting connection between her and her original husband as far as halacha is concerned, because once she marries somebody else, the halacha is she can't ever go back to that first husband because it'll seem like it was an adulterous relationship. So that whole idea shows there is lasting connection, or the halacha assumed there is lasting connection even between, even among people who are divorced, not always, but that there is the possibility of it. That might be then why Kohanim are told not to do that. Almanot, where the husband has fully passed away, so maybe the original assumption was, or the original practice was, that you didn't have to worry about it. You didn't have to worry about a continued connection, but in the future times when we're going to be more stringent about these things, maybe then it'll come to be seen or come to be understood that there is a problem there, and even there, the Kohanim will refrain from marrying such women, except those who are already used to being part of a Kohen family. They'll teach the people the difference between holy and profane, and pure and impure, v'ariv him yamdu mishpat, and they'll be the ones who do judgment, b'mishpatai yishpituhu, v'etorotai v'chukotai b'chom wadai yishmaru, v'etshapetotai yikadeshu, and they will keep the mishpatim, and they'll judge the mishpatim, and they'll keep all the holidays and all the Shabbatot, they'll sanctify, and they'll make sure that everything goes well. And they will again be, as they were always meant to be, but they were apparently not being by the time Yechezkel, the religious leaders who will bring people closer to Hashem. They won't become Tamei by a Tamei Mate. This is an old halacha. Like the Torah says, and after he gets Tahor, so this is already after he gets Tahor, he has to count 7 days, so this would be an example of halacha that's not quite the same way, right? So Rashi says it doesn't mean after he gets tahor, it means after he gets away from the mate. So then he has to wait 7 days, which is perfectly in line with our halacha. And the Radak says, this is an example, the Radak says, if Shashi is of the Atila to Sefer Kedusha, that maybe there'll be an additional level of Kedusha, they'll be even more careful about Kedusha, even though the Torah said 7 days and then you're Tahar, he'll count 7 days, become Tahar, and then wait 7 days, and then write back notes, because I'll interpret it as being no change. They make it fit in with the halacha as we know it. Pasuk of Zayin of Yom Bo'o El HaKodesh El HaChatzer HaPnimi L'Shev HaKodesh Yakriv HaChatato Neuman Shem Elokim. On the day he comes back to serve in the Beit HaMikdash, that's the way the Radak has it, the day after he finishes his Tumah and Tahara. Rashi thinks it's the first day that he comes in, meaning that we don't know of a Korban Chatat you have to bring in order to get back into the Beit HaMikdash after being Tameh. So that would be a new halacha. Rashi thinks that, no, it's a reference here to, and then the question would be why did it put in. In general, Rashi's explanations fit better with halacha as we know it. Radak's explanations fit better with the text as we see it, but raise all sorts of theological issues. So here in this case also, Rashi sees it as the korban that we know of, that when a kohen first comes to serve in the Beit HaMikdash, so this is the korban that he has to bring a korban. But the Radak says, no, it means also the Tosefet Kedusha, as another example of Kedusha, when you come back after being Tamei, you will bring this korban. Pasuk of Ched, Vayitah lahem lenachala, ninechalatam, vachuzot lahem v'Yisrael, ninechuzotam. This is fully consonant with the Torah as we know it. The Kohanim and the Levim don't get a nachala of their own, although we'll see later in the chapters they will get a much larger and well-defined share of the land of Israel than they had before. They're not going to get a land as Jewish people, as Jewish tribes. Hashem is their nachala, and their nachala will be from Hashem HaMincha V'Achatar V'Hashem HaMiyachlum, and they'll get all the korbanot to eat, V'Cholverim B'Yisrael HaMiyah, and any of the Jews set aside and they say is Kodesh, they don't want it to belong to them, and it will and will be given to Hashem, so that will go to them. And the first of everything, the Bikuri and the Trimot, will all go to the Kohanim. And the Chal you'll give to the Kohen, and that will bring all of that, Rashi says, Radak says, all of doing all of this will bring bracha, will bring blessing into your household, keeping these things right. And the parak ends by saying, but they won't be allowed to eat any nevela or trefa of birds or of animals. So this is obviously halacha that's true of every Jew, right? You can't eat anything. So why would you mention it with the Kohanim more? So the Radak thinks the function of the fact that these things not only these things are not only usher, but they also create tumah. And since Tumah, ritual impurity not being in the Beit HaMikdash, is important for the Kohanim to be aware of, so we have an extra warning to them. That's a difficult claim, because the Kohanim aren't warned against every kind of Tumah. They're really warned against tumat mate, the warning against ritual impurity by virtue of contact with a corpse, with somebody who has passed away. So you could argue, and presumably the Radak would argue, that no, but in future times we are being told that they have to be even more careful about things like that as well, and that that's what's being said here. I think it's a little bit problematic. In this case, Rashi explains it. I think Rashi is a, while still not an easy explanation, is a somewhat more convincing explanation. Rashi says it's because they are used to eating malika. So malika is when you slaughter a bird, when you kill a bird that's being offered as a korban. So you kill it from the back of the neck, and there's a whole ceremony that you do, but you kill it from the back of the neck, which ordinarily would make it an avela, which would make it inedible, unacceptable, unfit for eating as far as halacha is concerned. So in the Beis HaMikdash, though, it's allowed. But the Kohanim might make the mistake of thinking, since they're allowed to eat Malika in the Beis HaMikdash, they're allowed to eat it everywhere. They're allowed to eat Nevelos everywhere. Those rules don't apply to them. They have special rules. Since they do, in the Beis HaMikdash, have special rules, they might think they have those special rules everywhere. That's an important theme of the question of how well aware you are of what your rules do apply to you and don't apply to you.